People ask me all the time, they say, Martin Zender, what is it like to make sense for a living? And I say to them, it's as great as you think it is. Whatever you imagine it is, how great or grandiose or epic, it is that. It is that. And I bear this burden every day. Good morning, everyone. This is Martin Zender, and this is another edition of the Revelation series. We're delving into the unveiling of Jesus Christ. And along that line, I make more sense than anybody I know on the topic of the metaphor. And that sounds so boring. Oh boy, Martin's good at the metaphor. Big deal. No, it's a huge deal. Because, for instance, the entire Catholic Church has gone off the rails because they have not understood the metaphor of this is my body. Martin Luther didn't even get it. I'm far ahead of Martin Luther. I'm not ashamed to say it. I'm not too proud to say it. It's just a fact. He would yell at people practically because he believed in the transubstantiation. He believed that the bread became the body of Jesus Christ. And his emphasis was, is. Jesus said, this is my body. This is my body. And he would do that Lutheran thing. Is. Little did he know that the word is was the figurative part of the metaphor. What he should have said is, this is my body, because the is the only figurative part of a metaphor. That is the verb to be in between two nouns. A metaphor will always consist of two nouns on either side of the verb to be. In this case, this, that is a piece of bread. That's the noun. This piece of bread, which is literal, and you must understand it literally, this is my body. You must understand my body literally. So the stretch is, the word is. Obviously, Martin, Luther, the bread is not literally the body of Jesus. You lost your mind there, my monkish friend. Because you emphasized the figurative part. No. Jesus himself explains the metaphor when he says, that shall be broken for you. So his body was to be broken. That's the aspect of the bread. This is my body. This is, watch what I do here, Jesus, at the Last Supper. If I had been Jesus, I would have eliminated the possibility of taking this statement literally by saying the following. You see this bread? All right, now watch. Now, I'm breaking it and giving it to you, right? Okay, now, you remember me calling myself the bread of life? Okay, like, you know, I'm the sustenance of humanity. And like you guys, like, eat bread every day and you're sustained and you feel good and you eat bread for breakfast, put a little jam on it. And then at night, you butter it, eat it with your lamb. Right, okay. I'm the bread of life. That's the bread of breakfast, the bread of lunch, the bread of dinner. I'm the bread of life. Okay, well, we're eating bread again tonight, and we have a whole loaf here, but I'm breaking it and giving one piece to each of you. Well, my body is like this because what I'm doing to this bread is going to happen to my body in a few hours. It's going to be broken. But just like I'm giving this bread to you and you're eating it and you're gaining strength, well, anyone who receives my life, my message, my testimony, they will gain strength, just like they do from real bread. Except in this case, we're talking about my life, my testimony, my work here on earth. Oy! Oy vey. That's what I would have said. But to save space, printing costs, ink, Jesus says, this is my body. Instead of everything I just said, which was almost like a novella. Jesus says, this is my body. and he assumes the intelligence of the reader. Ooh, well, I'm not saying Jesus made a mistake there, because in fact he didn't. He wanted this deception to exist. He wanted people to misunderstand figures of speech. He wanted people to think that Babylon was a system of religion, and that's all it is. Ah, what a pity, really. But I won't let you forget what a metaphor is, especially when we get to the unveiling chapter 20. You know where we are now, right? We're in Revelation chapter 17. There are only 22 chapters of this book. That means we're getting close to the end. Kind of sad, I know. I'm a little emotional about it. I'm not going to think about it right now. But when we read that the lake of fire is the second death, now you know it's another metaphor. That means that the lake of fire is literal and the second death is literal. The is the figurative part, because obviously fire is not the death state. I love it. Yes, I know. Ask me as many times as you want. I love making sense for a living, and I especially love doing it in a laundry room. So we left off in the unveiling chapter 17. I perceive a woman drunk with the blood of the saints. Maybe we stopped with verse 5. I don't know, but I like going back here and picking up loose ends if we can. The woman was clothed with purple and scarlet, gilded with gold, precious stones, pearls, everything that humanity counts to be valuable. This woman has it. And again, these are figurative things. She's not, you know, on the earth literally dressed with precious stones and pearls, but all that humanity holds dear. Kind of like 2 Timothy 4, where Paul says that in the end days, you know, these doctrines of demons will tickle the hearing. People will heap up for themselves teachers in accord with their own desires. And this desire of humanity is for wealth, for reputation, influence. People love people who have power. They want to be seen next to them. They want to align themselves with them. They want to be on the same team. Having a golden cup, and a golden cup contains alcohol. And the cup is brimming with abominations and uncleanness and prostitutions, but it's alcohol. Whenever you hear of the cup, hand Jesus gave them the cup, it's filled with alcohol. Alcohol has particular properties. I don't know if you've ever noticed this about alcohol. I know my audience, you're very pure, innocent, and holy, but it has intoxicating properties. If you drink too much of it, you lose your mind, and you don't literally lose it, but you become temporarily divorced from your regular processes of thinking. And so this is what has happened with the cup of the prostitute that is handed to all the kings and the people of the earth. And on her forehead is written a name, on her forehead. This is the seat of her thinking. And this stuff comes across as knowledge, as information. Not only power, but knowledge and information. Thus, her name's written on her forehead. And this is the name written, secret, Babylon the Great. There again, God's adding great to the word Babylon. I can hardly believe it. Just like John, I'm shocked. You're kidding me, because Babylon is already great. It has been the capital of three world kingdoms, and it will be the capital of a fourth, a brimming metropolis filled with people, the wisdom of the age, the riches of the age, the wealth of the nations. And it's called Babylon the Great, the mother of prostitutes. Oh my God, this is the progenitor of every prostitute there ever was. This is the epitome. This is the essential prostitute. And the abominations of the earth, the mother of the prostitutes and the abominations. So it's not only the mother of the prostitutes. And people cite the Catholic Church, and I understand the temptation there, because the Catholic Church did breed many other brands of Christianity, and they're all prostitutes. Every brand of Christianity is a freaking prostitute. It's taking the things of God and selling them. It's even selling the salvation of Jesus Christ. Instead of saying it's free, well, they say it's free, but instead of meaning it, they barter it. They barter the favors of Calvary for your investment. Your investment involves faith, involves belief, involves dedication to whatever brand of system they dish up before you. It's a bartering system. It's a transaction. It's a business. We'll give you this much Jesus for this much dedication. It's falsehood. It's an abomination. It's prostitution. So it's tempting to say, yeah, the Catholic Church, but Babylon, the Tower of Babel existed before the Catholic Church. Catholic Church came around in what? Very soon after. It was part of the apostasy for sure, 300 AD. Constantine, I don't know. I hate church history. I don't study it. Maybe you expect me to be an expert in church history. I'm not. I'm an expert in the scriptures. Church history is church history. It's the history of people effing things up totally and putting God's name on it. Okay, there. That's church history. That's all you need to know. And I perceived the woman drunk with the blood of the saints, because this religion will always love to persecute the true people of God and the blood of the witness of Jesus. And not only the blood of the saints that predated Jesus, but post-coming of Christ, they prostitute those. And I marvel at perceiving her. The marvel is great. There's the great again. There's the word great again, twice in one passage. Very significant. And the messenger said to me, wherefore do you marvel? I shall be declaring to you the secret of the woman and of the wild beast. Declaring to you. I know this is somewhat of a review, but this is what I want to do. I will be declaring to you the secret. In other words, this has been a secret, but it's not going to be a secret anymore, because I'm about to make plain statements, and these will follow, and we're going to go through every one of them on Monday. This is Friday. We're going to go through every one of these things that were hidden that are now revealed. Because of this simple statement, I shall be declaring to you the secret of the woman and of the wild and of the wild beast. Bonus. Going to be declaring to you the secret of the woman. That's enough. But if you act now, we will also throw in a declaration concerning the secret of the wild beast. Operators are standing by. This is a limited offer only. Call now. Which is bearing her, undergirding her, has her on its back. And this is what John is literally seeing, this acrobatic act of this crazy wild monster and this hot chick on his back, decked out with just looking sexy as can be. Eye makeup, lipstick, hair done gorgeously. John sees this. Decked out with jewels and probably wearing opera gloves and high heels. The business, man. The business. Riding on the back of a crazy monster with iron teeth, copper claws, and all the heads and the horns that belong to the world's religions as described in Daniel chapter 7. And on Monday, we're going to start with verse 8. But you've had your saturation of Babylon for this week, I trust. And there's much more to say. Chapter 17 is a long chapter. After that, we're going to go into chapter 18. Keep your peace. That's all I say. I may get excited here. I may get upset because of the thought of how this thing is going to happen and how many people are going to be deceived. But what keeps me above the fray, what keeps me the happy, joyful, effervescent person that I am, is the fact that we're passing through this land, and our evangel is one of grace and of peace, and we're not going to be here when these harrowing things take place. We are going to be safely ensconced in the celestial realms with our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.